Pippa's Planet.
Pippa's Planet is brought to you by Stodels, helping gardens grow. It seems like forever since we've said hello to Cherise Viljoen, horticulturist from Kirstenbosch. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here. Maybe it's the season change. You know, you last saw me in summer.
In summer, you're right. Okay. Kirstenbosch gardens must be loving the rain, Cherise.
Absolutely. You know, I have this saying, if there's a 10% chance of rain in Cape Town, there's a 100% chance that 10% is falling on us.
It does. It always rains.
I wish I could blow it back to the catchment areas, but I'm happy for our own dam to be filling up and window gorge is pumping. The waterfall is looking beautiful at the moment.
Fantastic. So relieved to hear that. Now, with the drought in mind, I just want to mention to our listeners, I know many of you enjoyed last year's inaugural Cape Town Flower Show hugely. So you might be a bit disappointed to hear that this year's event is actually being deferred into 2018 as a result of the drought. You might be disappointed, but I think it's a very sensible decision. And Cherise, it's a similar decision to the one Kirstenbosch took with its own plant show earlier this year.
Absolutely. You know, we just can't expect to be selling gardeners' plants and promoting plants going into the drought season and when it was still so dry for us. And it proved to be a very sensible decision to make. So I applaud them for it. You know, it's not easy to make these changes, but it's a really good call.
Okay, so look, the event will not happen this year. It is planned now for October 2018. The venue is also changing to Grand West, but it still is going to be a four-day display of the most brilliant, creative, and beautiful uses of flowers. So please don't forget about the event. We will remind you closer to the time in 2018. We've got a few emails already coming through. Remember to get calling now on 021-446-0567 with your gardening questions. You wanted to talk a bit about fynbos today, Cherise.
I did. I wanted to share some fun fynbos facts. Many people might know this, but many people might not, that there are three main groups that make up fynbos. So if you look at it, you know, it gives this impression. And that impression will be given by Proteas, Ericas, and Restias, the grass-like plants. And then another interesting thing is that Proteas are then broken up again into actual Proteas, as we recognize them. The pincushions have got the best common name. They're called matchsticks because their little flower buds look exactly like matchsticks. So it's Proteas, pincushions, or matchsticks, and then the cone bushes, the leucodendrons. And that most Proteas and Ericas are divided into two groups, being reseeders or resprouters. And this is how they cope after fire. Mm. So they either come back from a seed bank, which is great, or they come back from a rootstock. And the interesting thing about the rootstock Proteas and Ericas is you can prune them back down to the ground. And they respond to that pruning exactly as if they've been burnt. And they come back and rejuvenate. So there's my fun fynbos facts for the day.
Thank you very much for the update. Okay, our first email is in from Marion in Stellenbosch, who is in the enviable position of moving into a place in a relatively rural area. The drawback is it's a property which hasn't been properly maintained for many, many years. So she says, as a result, there are huge piles of extremely old vegetation that has been cut back and then dumped as organic garden waste in corners of the garden. We don't have the time and money to move it all at the moment. Is it something that they could consider burning? And if so, would they need permission from the fire department or any kind of supervision? Do you know?
Yes, I do. It would be great if they could hire a shredder. It can be quite cost effective, actually, to shred the material and then put that back as a layer of mulch throughout the garden. But if finances are really an issue, and they can be, then just to let the local fire department know, and they'll give them guidelines as to how far away they need to be from any other vegetation or from their own fence, how to control it, which is the better time of day to do it. So really, it is a good idea to pop down to the local fire station and get their local guidelines as to how to maintain it, particularly if it's very old and quite large amounts. Mm-hmm. I usually break things up and start the fires with it, but it sounds like she's going to start a different kind of fire if she just lights hers.
Yeah, so good cautious. That you're being cautious, Marion. Thanks so much. I hope that's of help to you. Where would you hire a shredder from? Would a garden center have that? Or
a garden center, they'd have them for sale or be able to buy them, but usually your local tool hire spot should have a shredder for you, or a local hardware store might as well. And they're marvelous things. It's so therapeutic putting things through the shredding machine. Our garden club, for instance, has one that we can all share and hire. And all of us who've used it have loved the time, you know, watching your garden waste getting chomped and then coming out as beautiful green mulch on the other side. It's I recommend it.
Sounds as very an activity. Okay, thanks for the tip. Claire is on the line from Fishhook, and great, it's about Fynbos. Claire, welcome to the show.
Hello. Hello. Yes, I want, Charisse, I just wanted to, this drought thing. I wasn't worrying too much about my garden because it's not a lot that needs water, but my husband was doing the grey water thing, bucketing out our bath water. And I don't know if that's got something to do with it, but my precious Restio, which was about 1.5 meters, a bit more tall, and then I went round that corner of the garden and I saw, oh my goodness, it's down to half its size and it looks very sad. Now the thing is, it never struck me that any fynbos could die of drought. I don't know if that's right or not. Or whether it could have been, he did put one bucket of grey water on it, or if it was that. And I don't know now. It's got a few spikes that are standing tall that seem to be growing, but I don't know, is it going to come back to life the way it was?
Claire, quite likely it could have been the grey water. They don't like phosphates, and quite often our soaps have some phosphates in them.
Oh, really?
They shouldn't suffer from drought. You weren't overwatering in the first place, it sounds like, so they shouldn't have minded.
I've never worried with it, really. It got water when it rained, and I didn't think, you know, if you've got fynbos, you don't think so much about the watering.
No, you don't have to. And as to it coming back, quite likely if it's not completely dead, you can cut it down. I know they look terrible, like they've been in the army when you shear all their leaves off and all their stems off. But really, that's the thing to do now, is to leave the green ones, the few that they are, and to cut right back all the dead ones or brown ones. And that would give it the best chance of reviving. And after that, you'll be able to tell whether it's going to pull through or not, Claire.
Okay, and are they supposed to live forever?
No.
Nothing lives forever.
No, Restios do, and fynbos in general, do have a lifespan. It's usually anything from 3 to 8 years, sometimes as much as 12, and of course they do need the fire to rejuvenate them. How old is yours?
Well, this is the thing. Now you've said that. This is about 13 years.
It just took a change of weather and one dose of grey water, and there it decided it's spent its life well. It's on its way out, and you can plant 2 or 3 new ones.
Okay, I'll do that. How sad.
Just try to give it one more chance, just in case it's got another year or two in it for you, Claire.
Might be able to eke out a little bit longer. Claire, thanks so much for your call. 021-446-0567 is the number to dial. And with your question on anything, it doesn't have to be related to fynbos. I'm going to ask Charisse just to pop around to my computer screen and have a look at some photographs that have been sent to me. And while I do that, I just have to share with you a couple of messages that have come through, for particularly Rodney from Belleville, who was one of our singers for the Whitney Houston tickets. And Rodney, if you're still listening, Kim has WhatsApped us to say, wow, Ronnie, you had me in tears. Somebody else has also sent a message saying Rodney is the bomb. He must have been the bodyguard. So well done. You obviously touched a couple of hearts of our audience, Rodney. Congratulations. Somebody else WhatsApping to say, I'm so excited. My husband and I are going to listen tonight to the show. We hope you have a wonderful evening. Now, what Charisse has been looking at is a series of photographs sent to me by our listener, Trish, who's very, very worried about aloes. She's talking about a site in Sunnydale, integrated in the heritage of our family home. This is a homestead dating back to 1743, so a really, really historically valuable property. In particular, Trish writes, the 100-meter-long hedge of aloe arborescence that graces one side of the driveway, which year after year has always been such a beautiful, vibrant splash of color. They've been much photographed over the years and over the centuries, in fact, and we took it for granted that they would continue to flourish. But this year in May, we noticed something was terribly wrong. The leaves had a reddish tinge, there were very few flowers, and those that were there appeared to be deformed. Initially, we put it down to drought, but to our dismay, even after some rain, things are not getting any better. The stems were soggy, the leaves turning redder and shrinking, the hedge diminishing and collapsing. They thought maybe it could be the aloe beetle. This weekend, my son and I examined all the aloes on the property, and one of them has completely disintegrated. Now, she goes on to say, as I drive around the local area, I'm scanning aloe plants, and I notice that this is happening all over. For example, there's a crop of aloes in Capri, which looks like they'll soon be dead. Are the horticulturists at Kirstenbosch and other institutions aware of this problem, she asks, and what can be done about it? What do you think, looking at those photos, Cherise?
Well, it does look like they have a blight, like a bacterial infection. And certainly they are rotting from the inside. The redness is usually, it is related to drought, the redness. And it's almost like a natural sunscreen that succulents put in their leaves when they're under stress to help cope with the sunlight and, you know, the strain that they're under. But the rest of it absolutely looks like an infection. And it could well be that the beetle first penetrated and bored the woody stems. Aloe arborescens can get quite tree-like in its base or shrub-like with a woody structure, and then after that infection can set in. In fact, it's so bad that I'm going to refer the question to our succulent expert, Ernst van Jaarsveld. He's now working at Babylon's Turin, and he will definitely have a remedy and an idea of what's going on. Our aloes at Kirstenbosch are not showing signs of complete demise. They do occasionally get ill, and we allow them to just, you know, die, and we replant, or, you know, something in the garden takes care of it if it's pest-related. So could you forward me those
pictures? I absolutely will do that, and Trish, we'll see if we can get you some further feedback there. Okay, thanks for sharing an interesting dilemma with us. I hope we can get some get to the I hate to say get to the root of the problem. It's probably an awful pun.
No,
sorry,
actually, Pippa, that's perfect. You have to say it.
Thank you, Trish. We can take a few more calls on 0214460567. Your SMSs to 31567, and don't forget you can also leave a question as a voice note on WhatsApp using 0725671567. In the meantime, Brenda in Claremont has a fig tree that gets fruit fly quite often and is wondering about your suggestions for control. It's a very big tree, so they can't cover the whole thing.
What's lovely about fruit fly is they have a whole lot of biological traps that you can put in the tree. You can now get them at your local nursery, and they have the whatever attracts the fruit fly, the hormone or the scent or the carbohydrate, whatever it is, they now put into these fruit fly traps. And it's absolutely fantastic. You hang them like little lanterns in the tree, and they really help keep the population under control. They won't kill every last fruit fly. You'll have to share some of the fruit with them, but they're actually a really effective way of dealing with a problem without having to spray a poison. And of course, when the trees are so big, you get more on yourself than you do on any fruit flies. So go and find the biological controls that get hung in the tree that are traps that attract the fruit fly, and that should help you manage the problem.
Okay, thanks. Good luck, Brenda. I hope you come right with that. We are staying with pests, I guess, well, not pests, but things we don't want in our garden. Gordon wondering if there is a specific poison to use for nutweed in the grass or garden.
No.
What is nutweed?
A nutweed is that it's there we go. I'm stuck. It's that sedge that it's a really tenacious weed. It's got that little brown seed head that you can see and the star-like arrangement of green leaves.
Okay.
And it's tenacious. It'll grow where nothing else does. I mean, really, weeds have a lot to admire in their pioneer spirit and their tenacity. And the problem with them is as you pull them out, they leave little bulbs behind in the soil. So they really are nasty. What we often do with them is we get garlin and diesel, which is actually what you use to kill alien invasive trees. And we mix it up, the garlin with the diesel petrol. There's a recommended mixing rate on the pamphlet. And then we paint each nutsedge weed with it because it's a systemic herbicide. So it will kill any plant. But because it's systemic, it goes through the system of the plants right down to the roots. And that's how we deal with it. Otherwise, pull, 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 pull. Just don't give up. Just carry on pulling. Don't let it set seed. There's that saying that 1 year's seed is 7 years weed.
Yeah.
So try not to let them set their seeds.
Okay, good luck, Gordon. It sounds like you've got a big job ahead of you. Soya on the SMS line planted turmeric from the kitchen root last spring, which has grown, and she's sorry, has transplanted it to a bigger pot outside. Now, after the big storm the other day, the leaves have gone yellow. Will it eventually rebound?
I think it should. I suspect the turmeric might be semi-deciduous. And when the conditions aren't favorable, it simply dies down. It should pop back in spring. If a listener knows more than me about turmeric, I'd appreciate a little bit of help. But I'm guessing is that it does actually go dormant, as most plants do with rootstocks, and then would shoot back when in spring when the conditions are more favorable. And not to overwater while it's now going dormant. To put it in a slightly drier spot, but not to forget about it to the point where it then shrivels and dies.
Always a balancing act, isn't it? Okay. We've got literally 2 minutes left. If you're going to call, please call now on 021-446-0567. In the meantime, Anonymous asking about a Port St. John's creeper. Would it grow in the Western Cape as well as it does in the Eastern Cape?
Absolutely. They are so tough. They're fantastic plants. They can put up with the wind. They're really water-wise once they're established. I don't water mine at all. The only thing is they can look a bit bare-branched at the end of their flowering season when the wind catches them. But I just cut mine back and they sprout back vigorously. So that's the only difference between the Eastern and Western Cape, is in the Eastern Cape they tend to stay a lot more lush. But either way, it's one of those creepers that does better with a good cutback and very suitable for our coastal windy conditions and our soils.
Great. Okay, one more pestilence or pest in the plague in the garden. Adam on the SMS line asking what one can do about scale.
Scale is really awful. If you are a poison user, and in the case of scale, maybe we all should be, you can go down to your local nursery, and once again, you need to get a systemic pesticide. Sorry, they'll recommend one for scale. And with systemics, you actually drench the soil. You're not trying to cover the plant or the insect, because as the plant absorbs the herbicide and the scale sucks on the sap, then it kills it. If you're into self remedies and meditation, you can get some dishwashing liquid and some vinegar or some garlic, and you can carefully wipe the scales off all the stems and leaves of the plant and continuously wipe and wipe until you win. Those are my two options for you.
Lots of PT for everyone this afternoon. But Teresa, it's always lovely to have you with us. Thanks so much for your input.
I love coming in. Thank you, Pippa.
See you again.